Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Babe Diedrichsen Zaharias was a nationally prominent multi-sport athlete in an era when a woman who achieved that distinction was likely to be regarded as a freak. After she'd won the national AAU track and field championships as a team of one and then won three medals at the 1932 Olympics, some sports writers wondered if she might have been an it, if not a he. Certainly Don Van Natta's new biography does justice to Diedrichsen as an athlete, but he's also intrigued by what Diedrichsen accomplished as a force in the culture. Van Natta's contention is that Diedrichsen changed the way her contemporaries regarded not only female athletes, but women in general. When I had the opportunity to speak with Don Van Natta, I began our conversation by referring to his contention that Diedrichsen had learned important lessons from her father about storytelling. I asked the author how important those lessons had been to Diedrichsen's rise as an athlete.
It had so much to do with it. She learned at a very early age that if you tell a story well, and even if you stretch the truth a little bit, people will believe every word. And her father told her seafaring tales at a very young age that stretched the truth quite a bit. And Babe learned that lesson and applied it to her life as an amateur and a professional athlete. As she liked to say, you know, reporters don't always want to hear the truth. They want to hear fantastic stories, and she told them often.
Well, it's great when reporters hear fantastic stories from the athletes because then they don't have to make them up themselves.
That's right. But of course, she backed it up, but she was just a great self-promoter. Long before Muhammad Ali declared himself the greatest athlete of all time, Babe Diedrichsen did that, and then she went out and proved it.
As a child, Babe Diedrichsen was not an especially likable character. In fact, as you write, and I'm quoting now, she seemed to relish any chance to pick on black boys and girls. Was this a way for her to prove to people how tough she was?
Yes. She grew up on the wrong side of the tracks in Beaumont, Texas. And she discovered very early on that playing with girls was a waste of her time, and she wanted to play the boys and beat the boys at their own games, and she picked fights with boys all the time to prove herself that she was their equal.
Babe excelled as a basketball player, but you found that her teammates didn't think much of her. Why not?
Well, when she showed up to play semi-professional basketball in Dallas for Employers Casualty Insurance Company, again, she wanted to show that she was the boss. And she told her teammates, one woman that she met, she said, "Well, what position do you play?" The girl said, "Well, I'm the star forward." And Babe said, "Well, that's what I want to be." And so she was a trash-talking Texan in every sense of that phrase. Long before that term was coined, Babe was a trash talker.
Is it fair to say that as far as the participation of women at the Olympics was concerned, Babe Diedrichsen came along at the right time in 1932?
Yes. Women only competed in track and field events starting the Olympics prior to the LA Games in 1932 and the 1928 Olympic Games. And in 1932, Babe participated in three events and became the star, the breakout star of the Olympic Games by winning two gold medals and a silver medal.
To qualify for those Olympics, Babe Diedrichsen won the team championship at the AAU track and field meet in 1932, and she did it without teammates. How did that come about?
Colonel McCombs, who was her coach on the Employers Casualty Insurance Company, decided to send Babe up to Evanston, Illinois, all by herself to compete against teams of women of 15, 18, and 22 women. And that hot afternoon in Evanston, when Employers Casualty Insurance, that team was announced, Babe ran out on the field all by herself with her arms swinging wildly, and the crowd was just gasped at the audacity of this attempt of one woman to beat these teams. And she did it. Babe won five events on her own and tied for a sixth. When the day was over, she had 30 points, and the next team of 18 women had 22 points. Babe single-handedly won the AAU track championship.
Obviously, this was unprecedented. How did she respond? Was she gracious when she had to sort of turn to the second-place team as the first-place team?
No, she was not gracious. Babe kind of rubbed their noses in it, did a victory lap around the track. And then, you know, the press embraced her and said the American women's track and field team headed to Los Angeles was really Babe's team. And Babe let everybody know that. When she stepped off the train in Los Angeles, she declared to the press there at the train station that she was going to beat everybody in sight. Well, at the time, the only people in sight were her teammates on the U.S. women's track and field team. And she went out and did it, of course.
Not the most lovable of athletes, but good copy every time she competed.
Yeah, she wasn't. But I think it was by necessity. Babe looked to get an edge any way she could, whether it was a mental edge or a physical edge. She played that mind game better than anybody. But the press turned on her. After her Olympic success, they were really quite vicious about her. One reporter said it was unclear whether Babe was a she, a he, or an it. And there was lots of questions about Babe's gender, about her sexuality. There were stories saying that the only reason she competed was because she failed at the game of man snatching. And those reports around the country by the national columnists deeply wounded Babe.
How did she respond to being wounded? Because she had been previously celebrated.
Well, how she responded is she tried to find a way to become a professional athlete in the early 1930s when there were very few opportunities for a woman to do that. And she ended up on the vaudeville stage just 5 months after her Olympic success in Chicago with sellout crowds. But she walked away from it, even though she was making incredible money at the height of the Depression, because she just really wanted to play a game. And that's really the story of Babe Diedrichsen. Her whole life was a quest to find a place to play. And finally, she gravitated toward golf.
You write that Babe Diedrichsen was ahead of her time, sometimes as much as half a century ahead of her time, and that, quote, unwittingly she was redefining how American society viewed women in general, not just female athletes. How so?
In many ways. She was a pioneer, certainly on the athletic field, in the sense that she was a multi-sport athlete when the public really didn't expect much from women in even just one sport. Her braggadocious nature and her self-promotion were way ahead of her time. In 1930 and 1931, before her Olympic success while she was playing semi-professional basketball, she was actually a pioneer of, I believe, a free agency. She created a scheme that other teams would recruit her for more money to try to get a higher salary from Employers Casualty Insurance of Dallas, Texas. She was ahead of her time when it came to marketing herself as a brand. She had contracts in the 1940s and 1950s from sporting good companies, from car batteries, from cigarettes. So in so many ways, she redefined herself as an athlete. But as a woman, she knew in the late 30s that hard-edged Babe Diedrichsen was not necessarily ingratiating itself with the American public, and she softened her image. She got married to a professional wrestler named George Zaharias, and she began wearing dresses and changed her hairstyle, painted her nails, talked up the fact that she was a happy homemaker, and the public, for the most part, bought it. I mean, there was some sincerity to it, but there was also quite a bit of calculation to it as well.
You mentioned her turning to golf, and Babe Diedrichsen was such a successful golfer that in 1954 she was named the Associated Press Female Athlete of the Year for the sixth time. Would there have been a Ladies Professional Golf Association if it hadn't been for her?
I don't think so. I think the LPGA was created to showcase Babe Diedrichsen's great talents and her great showmanship. Babe took that experience on the vaudeville stage and brought it to the fairways and the greens in a way that galleries had never seen before. She would make fun of the people she'd play with when she did exhibitions with great golfers like Gene Sarazen. She toured during the early 40s and did events with Bob Hope and Bing Crosby. And it was a way for the promoters of the time and the sporting goods company owners to get together and create a tournament literally for Babe Diedrichsen.
She was kind of the Tiger Woods slash Jack Nicklaus of her time as far as winning golf tournaments were concerned, and her last couple of wins were particularly exceptional given what she had gone through before them.
Yes, Babe got cancer in 1953, and the diagnosis was quite dark, and the prognosis was quite dark by her doctors. They told her that she would never play professional golf again. Babe believed it for a day or two. She actually tried to give away her golf clubs to a friend who refused to accept them. She had major surgery in April of 1953, a colostomy. And despite that prediction made by those doctors, just 15 months later, Babe won the U.S. Women's Open by 12 strokes. an incredible comeback, Bill. I mean, really one of the greatest comebacks in American sports history.
By that point, she was a good deal more lovable, I mean, even to those playing beside her on the golf course, I gather.
Well, she changed in a dramatic way. After that U.S. Women's Open victory, the third of her career, she dedicated the win to her doctors and also to the thousands of fans who had written her cards and letters and telegrams. She really became an inspiration to people with cancer, and she became an anti-cancer crusader at a time when very few public figures talked publicly about the disease. Babe Ruth, for instance, when he died in 1947, no one knew that he had cancer until after his death. Babe confronted the cancer in a very public way, raised money for the American Cancer Society, and created a foundation that raised quite a bit of money, and she really was an inspiration. And her feats on the golf course after that major surgery inspired millions of Americans.
The Texas Historical Commission put a marker on Babe Diedrichsen's grave, a marker which you characterize in your book as, quote, engraved with falsehoods. What does the marker say, and what did the commissioners get wrong?
I think they got just about everything wrong, unfortunately. They said that Babe was born in 1914, when in fact she was born in 1911. In fact, this is the centennial of her birthday just this past June. They said that she was named after Babe Ruth, that her nickname came from Babe Ruth, which is a common mistake that's been made by newspaper men and past biographers. In fact, her family named her Babe. There's also a marble statue that's there that has a quote that it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, but how you play the game. And it attributes that quote to Babe Diedrichsen. It's, of course, the famous Grantland Rice quotation. And as I point out in the book, that is not a quotation that Babe believed in. She thought the most important thing was winning, and she had no taste at all for losing. So unfortunately, there are a few bits of misinformation at Babe's gravesite in Beaumont, Texas.
Don Van Natta Jr. is the author of Wonder Girl, The Magnificent Sporting Life of Babe Diedrichsen Zaharias, published by Little Brown, and the author joined me from WLRN in Miami. Don, thank you very much for speaking with me.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
My conversation with Don Van Natta will be featured in this week's program. I'll also be talking with Dave Zirin, who's the guest editor for the issue of The Nation, which is devoted to sports. We'll be visiting various NFL teams as they return to the business of football following the lockout. I discovered that fans are delighted. And speaking of lockouts, I'll be talking with Professor Gabe Feldman, the director of the sports law program at Tulane University, in order to determine if the pessimism with which most observers regard the NBA lockout is warranted. And then we'll move on to something completely different, a sport called Dainty, in which one hits one stick with another stick. It's a game with which you are almost certainly entirely unfamiliar, unless you live in Louisville, Kentucky, in which case you regard it as a worthy and valuable tradition. So join us, and remember, you can always listen to the program at onlyagame.org.